Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock. And while the President of South Africa hopes to have engagements with the President of the United States, one such party that doesn't hope to have engagements with other parties is Poland. This is our interesting law or weird law from around the world. In Poland, Winnie the Pooh is banned from playgrounds and schools due to concerns over Winnie the Pooh's attire or lack thereof. That might be one of the strangest laws that we've seen around the world, and poor Winnie the Pooh. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha, and on the show today, we're taking a look at the increase in minimum wage. That has always been a contentious topic. We finally got some indication of a revised minimum wage figure. We're going to be looking at that with the labor expert and seeing if we can make sense of that. We've got a conversation with the African Association for Automotive Manufacturers around their conversations that they've been having at this week's mining indaba. We're going to be reflecting on that, the role of mining, the role of automotive in mining, and how it all comes together. Then we've also got a conversation around the budget speech with Standard Bank. We're building up towards that budget speech that's happening later in the month. We're going to start our conversations early so that we can get as many of them in and as many thoughts in before we have the actual speech take place. The speech is about 2 weeks away at the moment. Finalized dates at the moment, I think we're looking at around the 19th or the 20th, but I'll keep you up to date as we know the confirmed dates from National Treasury. We also have a conversation with the Financial Sector Conduct Authority around their latest round of warnings and concerns. For those that are new to the show, we do this as many Wednesdays as we can in collaboration with the FSCA and other partners that issue these sorts of consumer awareness warnings. We hope that these insights help you make better decisions and help you navigate these financial offers that are being thrown at you a lot better. And then because it's Wednesday, we're going to wrap up the show with an executive lounge segment. We've got a conversation with the CEO of Honor South Africa. We're going to get to know him a little bit better and get to see what it is he gets up to when he's not running Honor South Africa.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As usual, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. It's been an interesting day of movements, and I'm joined on the line, as we are on every Wednesday, by Sasfin Wealth's David Shapiro to take a look at some of these movements. Good evening, Uncle David. Lovely to catch up with you. Always great to speak to you. Gold price, new highs. Platinum price, finally moving. We got the bottom.
Not the gold price. Gold price has been going up, and I think it's going to continue just rising. I think a lot has to do with President Trump, because I think, you know, markets are in this mindless stupor. No one's quite sure what you're going to wake up to the next morning. You know, this morning we woke up to the fact that he wants to turn Gaza into a Riviera, you know, a playground for the rich. And you just sit there and say, is this really happening? You know, and so I suppose we have to try and translate that into the market. And that's why I think so much confusion. And gold, nearly 2,900, probably heading towards 3,000. And it's because everybody's buying gold, I think, just very nervous of the situation we are in the world, not quite sure what Trump's going to do tomorrow morning, whether tariffs are real, whether they're not real.
And that's a scary thing, Uncle David. I mean, thinking about the fact that you have the president of such a significant economic player in the global landscape just absolutely making any and every decision that he deems necessary on a whim, on a social platform. You don't have, there's no structure to any of this. I mean, we could wake up and he could have declared war on some countries and we don't even know this.
That's a problem. And you're not telling the truth. And these are the chaps who are in charge of the nuclear buttons. So it is a very scary prospect. You know, I think he's just trying to rattle everybody into some kind of action. You know, that's his nature. I think he's more of a paper tiger than a tiger with a very wild bite. As we've seen with the tariffs, introduce them in the morning, withdraw them in the evening. So I think the markets are very confused at the moment, and you're nervous to take any major stand. But I must say that apart from that, we are getting good numbers out of the United States. The United States still seems to be going along fine, and generally markets pointing towards a better year. So how do you navigate it in the short term? Very difficult.
When we look at those numbers and the data that is coming out of the US, I mean, I think about things like the jobs data that's set to come out tomorrow, the unemployment data that's probably going to follow with that as well. Are we concerned at this point about economic data as much, or is the focus and the attention squarely on Donald Trump and the things that he's saying at the moment?
I think it's a mixture of both. You can't ignore the economic numbers, and you can't ignore Trump. So far, the economic numbers are very good and continue to improve. We're seeing some incredibly good results come out of U.S. tech, even though you might see headlines like underwhelming for Alphabet. They were anything but underwhelming. You know, we're a company, I have to laugh, Jimmy, because he has a company who grows its revenues, I don't know, 20-30%. And we call that underwhelming. And yesterday we get excited because Pick and Pay is up 3.5%, you know. So it just it gives you some concept of how big these businesses are, how powerful they are. But so that side of it is delivering. I still think AI is a very massive theme. But and then the other themes, even like the Zempics and the Wegovys, the Novo Nordisk, you know, the diabetic and obesity drugs. So there's a lot of things happening, but we don't know where Trump is. You know, you don't know what silly things he's going to do. I think he will. I think, you know, this will blow over. I don't think that tariffs are going to be as worrisome as some of the headlines are projecting.
Uncle David, for someone who started off with so much steam in his first, call it less than 100 days, is this sustainable until 2029?
No. You know, anybody who's ever run a marathon or even a 400 meters, you know, if you start sprinting the first 400, believe me, the next 300, you're going to start losing breath, and eventually the final lap, you just fall over and die. So I think it's pretty much that. I don't think he can keep this up. You know, before people start criticizing and before you start to see opposition. I think you know, the opposition is just numb. The Democrats don't know where to turn. They were so obliterated. They've got no one to lead them. So there's no one really objecting to anything. And I think in the world as well, you know, this Europe's not coordinating. No one can coordinate any kind of response to the outrageous thing that he says. So eventually they will. I think, you know, somewhere along the line, we'll find some adults getting together in a room and addressing his madness.
So hopefully sanity prevails at some point. We're certainly a long way away from that. And as you mentioned, Uncle David, it is a marathon. And as you said that, I looked over at my sound engineer who's done 14 Comrades marathons, and he agrees with you. You can't just run the first 100 meters and think you're going to make it to the very end. Someone should tell President Trump this. Uncle David, what about the Rand? The Rand seems to be clawing back. We were at 19 Rand at the start of the week. We're at 18.54 at the moment. Is the market starting to say this was an overreaction?
I think this is dollar. The dollar will weaken. And that's a good sign, because what it does, the reason the dollar was strong was concern about tariffs, concern about inflation, concern that the Fed would not reduce rates, and I think that's beginning to unwind. I would seriously pitch the Rand somewhere 1750 to 18, you know, by mid-year, and even better, I think, as global markets settle down and things begin to improve and the dollar starts to ease off a bit. So I might be too optimistic, but, you know, when it starts to move, it moves fast. So, and it, look, we were 1830, we ran up to 19, we've come all the way back to the 1850s now, and you can find it at 18 pretty easily. So, just be careful of that, you know, be careful of being too speculative on the, you know, trying to read it too much, but this is the direction it can take.
Well, lots of factors are still out there and up in the air that could influence the markets. We'll have to keep an eye on how these factors continue to develop. Thank you, as always, Uncle David, for the time and for the insights. Always lovely catching up with you. David Shapiro of Sasfin Wealth on the market movements, what could potentially be driving some of the investor sentiment and where we go from here.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
And we're taking a look at some conversations that have been ongoing at the mining indaba that's taking place in Cape Town. That has been going on this week, started on Monday, ends the end of the week. We have been having some of these conversations throughout the week. And of course, we will not have the opportunity to wrap up the indaba tomorrow owing to the State of the Nation address. So we thought we'd take a look at where we are on some of these important conversations that have been taking place. And we're taking a look at the mining conversation where it relates to automotive and the transition into EVs. I'm joined on the line by the CEO of the African Association for Automotive Manufacturers, Dave Coffey, to take a look at this. Good evening, Dave. Thanks so much for taking the time. What has today been like at the indaba? I mean, obviously, there were a lot of conversations taking place. There was a panel discussion that you were a part of. What has been sort of the general tone as the week has progressed?
Yeah, thank you for including me. And firstly, I'm really impressed with the mining indaba. It's very well attended. And it's the first time that we've got strong automotive presence as participants in the whole event. And I think that just shows the opportunity and interest in the automotive sector. So we've had a panel yesterday, an automotive panel, and today was a workshop around the opportunity with regards to beneficiation of minerals to be used in batteries for electric vehicles. You know, the continent is well endowed with these minerals, and the opportunity is to leapfrog from extraction to beneficiation. And the focus was on there in terms of, you know, what must one do to effectively make that transition.
Mm. Beneficiation has been a topic that has gone as far as the presidency of South Africa on what happens on the African continent and in South Africa in particular. How much of that shift has kind of moved from saying, let's not just talk about it, but let's put down firm commitments? I mean, the automotive sector is a significant employer and a significant contributor towards the South African economy. But over and above that, some of these conversations for the longest time have been theoretical conversations, so to speak. Are we starting to see the shift towards these are the commitments, this is where we're putting the money where our mouth is, and is that transition kind of happening?
Yeah. So my understanding of this is that there are now discussions going on in terms of how does one actually make it happen? You know, what are the incentive structures? How does one go about that? So those are discussions. And it's not just about, and I strongly believe this, it's not just about one country actually putting forward and jostling for prime position. In Africa, we need to operate in a regional basis. You know, there are many countries have got these minerals. And in line with the continental automotive strategy, you know, it's not every country can make a vehicle in Africa because you need scale. So some countries will make vehicles, other countries will make components, and others will participate in the beneficiation of minerals for batteries. Not only for batteries too, but one also has the requirement for copper for cables. Now, all cables used in wire harnesses on the continent today are actually imported, the copper rod, and then the cable is made. So it's for current opportunities and future. So I'm a strong believer in actually getting countries to collaborate, and one really needs political leadership in this space and develop the right industrial policies to attract investment. We need to go out there and put ourselves on the map so that people who are looking for this, and with the geopolitical tensions, there's great demand. I mean, if you just consider the demand will outstrip supply. And so one is, we're really in a good position to actually participate.
Mm. Dave, when we look at the collaborative efforts that you spoke about earlier, how do we balance that from an economic standpoint? I mean, I'm thinking about some of the geopolitical issues that have surfaced just recently on the African continent, the likes of Lesotho wanting land claims against South Africa, the likes of Rwanda coming through and saying they want to have other sorts of war-related discussions, and the tensions that are there. How do we kind of distill and get past those tensions and say there's a bigger picture here? There's the opportunity to make the continent better than what it is. How do those conversations come to the fore?
Yeah, I think we also need to demonstrate success here. We need a number of players that are willing and able to actually find some collaborative solution and determine their role in the value chain and show that. And that will actually then attract keenest to participate. Yes, it is difficult to engage where there is conflict. You know, in some of those countries, we have been discussing opportunities, but we'll need to go with a coalition of the willing and those who can participate and actually make it happen.
Dave, when we look at the transition and the move away from an automotive sector, we kind of saw there was a huge craze around, we're going into the EVs, we're doing it now, we've got these timelines. We saw international companies, the likes of Audi as producers and manufacturers, saying we want to be clean by 2030, and everybody had set milestones. And then it kind of just all went quiet. I think everybody just possibly got to the realization that it might not be as quick and as easy as it was originally envisioned. Is there still a lot of momentum to say we still are committed to this EV transition?
Yeah. So I think we start off by saying we're absolutely committed to decarbonization. Right? And countries will actually transition at different rates. I mean, the affordability issue is key, and that's what you're alluding to there, is that when countries, develop markets, withdraw subsidies, then the demand has dropped. You know, because the price parity has not been achieved. When we get to that point, sure, there will be a serious acceleration. So it's important that we offer hybrids, you know, plug-in mild hybrids, or even there are some countries in Africa that have got a lot of gas, and they're saying, how can we use that? I mean, if you just look at what cars are running on the road today, we're a dumping ground for the world for ICE engines. You know, Africa has demand and produces around 1.2 million new vehicles a year, yet 3 to 5 million used vehicles are actually imported into Africa, and it's an affordability issue. And a survey run by UNEP actually shows that these vehicles coming out of Europe are 18 years old. So we're trying to change that, but we need to bring in affordable mobility, and that's the projects that we're running with. But there are some sectors that are moving fast in Africa, and I'll talk specifically about Africa because that's where we focus. If you look at two-wheelers and three-wheelers and public transport, East Africa is a leader in electric motorcycles, and it's exciting to see these different options that are coming through. So there is momentum there. We are trying to clean up the act in terms of the fuels used in Africa, because the older fuels obviously have the greater carbon emissions. And as we start regulating used vehicles, that will improve. So there is a transition. Just certain the countries will handle it at different speeds.
There's certainly a lot to be optimistic about. There's certainly a lot that is going to set or that could benefit the continent, but we all need to be on the same page, pulling together so that we can achieve the most desired outcome. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Thanks so much, Dave, for those insights and for the time. Dave Coffey, CEO of the African Association of Automotive Manufacturers, on the role of EVs in mining and the beneficiation conversation on the African continent.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
And earlier today, we got updates from regarding the minimum wage that's been increased recently. We had covered this previously. We had looked at how much minimum wage has increased by over the last couple of years and the role that then plays in the economy. We're going to be taking a look at the latest increase and trying to make sense of it. I'm joined on the line by labor law expert Patrick Deal to take a look at this. Good evening, Patrick. Thanks so much for taking the time. Latest figures are out, particularly ahead of a very important budget speech. Are we happy about the increase in minimum wage? Or are we still feeling that there's a lot that can be done? Where do we stand on the latest figures?
Good evening, Jimmy. I don't think the little bit that's been granted, I suppose to that extent one can be happy with it. But really, in the context of what the actual rand amount is that domestic workers get in terms of the minimum wage, but not only domestic workers, but also farm workers, it is a small amount, but at least it is an amount, and it sets some sort of baseline for the minimum wage. But it's a low amount. If you take 28.79, which is now the increased, it's been increased by 4.4%. Effectively, what that means is that it's calculated as over a 45-hour week. It's just less than 1,300 rand a week for a 45-hour week. So it's a full day's week, full days, 5 days a week. The effect would be that it calculates up to 260 rand a day. So you can imagine trying to live on 260 rand a day to feed your family, to travel to work and back, and so on. And the monthly, if you're working, you know, the full month at a 45-hour week, 5 days a week, the monthly pay, minimum, that is, comes to just over 5,600 rand a month. So it is it's a set as an amount, but obviously it's low, and it's obviously not ideal for those in that position.
Mm. Patrick, where seems to be the trouble? I mean, how is it that we are a little more than 30 years into democracy, we know where the pain points are, we know what the challenges are. Where does the lag kind of come in where it becomes difficult to now increase this minimum wage to a livable wage?
Well, a couple of things, Jimmy. First of all, it's supply and demand. The supply of jobs, is far lower than the demand. The demand outstrips the supply of jobs, particularly in domestic workers and so on. And so that the natural market forces then put the supplier of the job, the household, the person who employs someone, at the advantage on a take it or leave it basis. So this is what I'm offering. And in a lot of cases, don't even offer the minimum wage. They offer less than that. And a person who's desperate for the work and standing in a long queue of people applying for the job will take it on the basis that it's, something is better than nothing. And so really, but it's also, to me, I think it's the particular circumstances of working in a particular household, as a workplace, if we like to think of that in terms of labor law terms. It's a very special kind of relationship. You've got family, you've got children, and very close-knit kind of relationships, close-quarter relationships. It's very difficult to manage how those relationships unfold and how they're dealt with. And so the issues around about with trust, trusting people to come into your house, to work with your children, to work with your things in the house. There's a lot of, I think, nervousness about people who, have trust problems with domestic workers and so on. But the main thing, to answer your question directly, is affordability. Basically, householders who can afford these are on the middle to upper incomes. And from the middle down, lower down, people simply can't afford them because they've got other pressures to pay for. And they can do without the domestic work. They'll do it themselves. And in fact, most of the time, most domestic workers don't work the full week. So it's not a true reflection about what they're actually getting. So many domestic workers are either just work 1 or 2 days a week or 3 days a week. And they go from one employer to another employer. And so it's precarious work. And they will try and get as many days a week. I mean, the mentality of a lot of domestic workers, how many days of a week can I get? How many days a month can I get so I can get the maximum? And they'll generally, because of the supply and demand factor, will generally cling to the work. And that puts downward pressure on any attempt to raise the minimum wage, because that simply pushes employers beyond the tipping point where they will say, I can't afford it, I'll do it myself. I can do without. This is, in a sense, a lot of the time, something of a luxury, and I can do without it. So those are the kinds of pressures which are absolutely unique to the domestic employment situation, which doesn't apply as much in other more formal settings. And policing it is virtually impossible, because now you've got, if you've got a million household workers, domestics, you've got over a million workplaces to police, to follow that up, that they're paying the minimum wages and conditions and so on. And then, well, that's impossible. Unions can't organize effectively either. So there's a lot of, downward pressure on the wage that really favors the employer and the supply and demand equation.
Mm. Certainly a conversation that has to continue to happen. We have to have a bigger conversation around how we address this in a more sustainable manner, because to live on a 28.79 rand per hour does not seem practical at all. I think we'll have to leave the conversation there, Patrick. Thanks so much for those insights. Patrick Deal, labor law expert on the latest 4.4% increase in the national minimum wage.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's a new year, and with a new year comes a lot of new challenges. But some of the challenges come through from last year. Some of the things you drag into the new year as baggage. You think you make good New Year's resolutions and you don't, and some people don't adhere to the New Year's resolutions. That being said, we're going to keep it going with our existing feature that we've had from last year. That is our Warning Wednesday feature that we do with the FSCA and a bunch of other stakeholders. When we can, we try to do it as often as possible, because it's important that you know the things you need to be aware of. And as I said, the year has started, but some people are still continuing with the scams and things that they shouldn't be doing. I'm joined on the line by the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Gerard van Dieven, to take a look at where the FSCA is at the moment, what kind of year we're in for, and how much tougher it's going to be for scammers to pull things off. Good evening, thanks so much for chatting to me. Always lovely to catch up with you. You'd think we'd start off the new year with some positive news and with less things happening, but it seems scammers are still doing what they do best. It's still unrealistic returns and impersonations and everything.
Unfortunately, you're so right, Jimmy, and I don't know if it's too late to say I hope it's a good year for you, and certainly for your listeners, I wish it's a scam-free year for them. But you are very right. Nothing has changed. If anything, from where I sit, it seems like the scammers have upped their game. And you know, these days they are assisted with artificial intelligence. They are assisted with social media platforms that that means that they can get their messages out so much faster. So you're right. It is back in the game, as if nothing has changed. And talking about, you know, they get all this assistance these days. I can see it in the fact that impersonations and deep fakes, those are the things that's growing. And what's so sad about that is these impersonations and deep fakes are so good that I cannot tell you that I would not be caught if I didn't do the job that I was doing. It's really realistic. So I feel so sorry for our South African public that get bombarded with this all the time. But you ask, you know, how are we going to deal with it? So we will obviously keep on warning the public, but that's not enough. So we are also working with the International Organization of Securities Regulators to engage with the social media platforms. And, you know, you would have seen from the warning so far in 2025, Telegram is a big issue. I will go as far as saying, if you get any financial offer on Telegram, just accept that it's a scam, because that seems to be really the popular one. So both on South African level and on the international level, there's a plan and a project to engage with these platforms to say, how can we protect the users a bit better? And that will certainly be, you know, we need to start using AI, and we need to start using the technology to fight this as well. So let's hope some good comes out of that. And let's hope when we speak later than a year, I can tell you that we've done a whole lot of things.
It's very interesting, Gerard, that you mentioned that the platforms now are being brought into it, because for the longest time, these sorts of platforms sit there and say, we're independent, we just provide a social network of sorts, we provide a chat function or whatever it is, a messaging platform, and now not just South African regulators, but international regulators as well are saying platforms need to be held accountable to a certain degree for the things that they allow onto their services. Are we seeing that, like Telegram in South Africa perhaps, that some of the types of scams are more related to certain platforms? I mean, I think about the warnings that have been issued and just the amount of unrealistic returns that we're seeing. There was a time a lot of this was on Facebook, and now we're seeing that shift away from platform to other things. Are some of these scams very specific to certain platforms?
Yes, and as I said, Telegram is definitely top of the list. And you are right; it's moving to the more modern platforms where they know they're going to find all the people. Websites, for instance, it still happens, but it's easy to take down a website because we get really good cooperation from the hosts of these websites. You know, if there's a scam, we can quickly show it's a scam, and they assist us with taking down the website. So I think people pick this up and they move on. So one of the things that we are doing is we have a social media monitoring external experts to look at catchphrases, those ones that you and I know very well, and to catch that kind of proactively. But you're absolutely right. It's moving to other platforms, and I think those are also the platforms that don't have that strong anti-fraud measures. You know, all of these platforms have an address that you can forward to and report a fraud or report a scam, and they will then react to that in their own way. We won't necessarily get feedback, but they will. But I don't think that's enough, Jimmy. And I don't want to make a statement to say that they should be held accountable, but I definitely think, and this is definitely an international view, that there should be much more in terms of protecting the public. It's not good enough to say that I only provide a platform for people to chat. You need to, if you're going to put that up, I mean, journalists are held accountable. The rest of the world is held accountable when their space are being abused. So I think it's just fair that this discussion should be stepped up, and because that would be the answer at the end of the day. You know, if there's anti-fraud measures that's much stronger, and maybe some rules in place to say this is a social media platform, this is not a place to do business. I am yet to come across one financial services provider who does business on Telegram. That's just not how these guys do it. Mm. But, you know, how do you get that message to everybody in South Africa? That's the question, eh?
I think that's definitely a question that we will have to keep trying to answer. Mkharat, before I let you go, I want to look at some of the other things that the FSCA has been doing. There's been a very concerted effort around conversations that you and I have spoken around signal providers, around services that are being offered without the requisite licensing. I can imagine that this is how we end up with a situation where people then say, I need to put in a claim with the Ombud because I've been wronged, and you should have just done your research and not used an unauthorized service.
No, absolutely. That's the message that's always in the headlines for us and for you as well, is check whether this person is regulated, have a license, and not just check whether it's whether he or she is licensed, check whether it's licensed to do that specific financial services. Because some people are very clever. They would get a license to, let's say, sell funeral policies, which is an easy license to get for obvious reasons. But then they have an FSP number and a license, and then they start doing investments, which is a really difficult license to get for good reason as well. So you're absolutely right. We are keeping at it, and part of that is certainly signals. And, you know, you can probably cut the signal contraveners into two. There's the group who can, well, you know, I never thought of it that way. I never thought, Jimmy, that providing signals is actually advice. I see your point. I'll stop immediately. And then there's the other group. And they know what they're doing is wrong, and they just keep on doing it because they get paid for it. But I think now where we are now, you can't say anymore that you didn't know it was wrong. But now you must know it. And the bad news about all of that, and I might be a little bit out of my comfort zone for saying this, but anecdotally, my experience has been all these signal providers and all these copy traders and all that, I don't see major success for their clients. So they're not good at what they do, and that's why the FSCA, before they give a license for you to give financial advice, they require that you must have certain experience and certain training and certain qualifications, etc. So it all comes together at the end, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And with it all coming together, it is all coming together in an effort to protect you as the consumer. That's why we have this feature. It's why we try to keep you abreast of what's happening, what you need to look out for, where you need to go if you need help. If you need help, if you have any queries, email the FSCA directly. All of their information is on their website. If you need to reach out to the Financial Ombud, the Financial Ombud's details are also on the FSCA's website. So all of the resources are there for you, folks. Please don't be the victims of these sorts of things in 2025. It's a new year. Let's make better decisions. Thank you so much, Gerard, for those insights and for the time. As always, Gerard van Dieventer, Divisional Head of Enforcement at the FSCA, joining us to take a look at our first round of Warning Wednesdays for 2025.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. We are about 2 weeks away from the budget speech. The national budget speech to be delivered by National Treasury will be taking place later this month. And ahead of that speech, there are a couple of considerations that we might want to be looking at. Obviously, there have been a few developments that have affected how we could potentially see the budget speech shaping up. We're going to take a look at some of the expectations ahead of the budget and what we could potentially be in for in 2 weeks. I'm joined on the line by the head of a domestic fixed income at Melville Douglas. That's a part of the Standard Bank Group, Mzimasi Mabete, to take a look at some of our expectations around the budget. Mzimasi, thanks so much for taking the time. Let's kind of get a sense of where we are from a South African perspective. The midterm budget speech took place in October. We kind of got very little, very muted conversations from National Treasury around where we could be headed come February. February has come around. We're here now. How is the South African economic landscape looking this time of the year compared to what it was looking like about 6 months ago?
Thank you, Jimmy, and good evening to you and to your listeners. Just to kick off the conversation, it is no question that our economy is still very much lackluster, impeded by some key factors that impede our growth. You know that we still have infrastructural and logistical problems. Up until recently, up until this week, we had about 300 days of non-interrupted power supply. However, it has hardly been a year since we've had that non-interrupted power supply. And between me and you and the listeners, we know that every manufacturing entity requires electricity to operate. Small businesses require electricity to operate. It is key and central to the economic lifespan of this country. And of course, with these interruptions in power supply, they've impeded economic growth. And we had welcomed the fact that we had almost had a year without power supply. And it would be very important going forward, problems at Eskom notwithstanding, in order if Eskom could continue supplying us with electricity so that the economy can begin to lift. And of course, you cannot talk about economic stuff without talking about infrastructure and logistics. We know the problems that have been at Transnet. We know the logistical problems that we have in the country. And for instance, if I look at operational Volendlel, it is exactly some of these things that it wants to address. But of course, where are we right now as to where, for instance, we were six months ago? You'd remember that almost about 6 months ago, we were in the height of elections. That election came in and went. It was an area of volatility and an area of uncertainty where, for instance, investors adopted a wait-and-see approach as to where things would go. Indeed, that political risk is behind us because then elections were held and an outcome was delivered. And what has happened in our politics, whether we agree or not with the current political arrangement that we have, the markets have endorsed it. And hence, for instance, we saw the recovery in our bond yields, we saw the recovery in our currency. That was a stamp of approval of the political landscape. Up until we had the outcome of the U.S. election in early November, and it not only roiled SA markets in general, it roiled markets across the globe. And we are in that uncertainty because as I speak to you right now, we do not know what the extent and the impact of American policies would be in global markets and in global economy. And South Africa being part of global economy, there is definitely that uncertainty that lingers. But if I were to summarize as to what our economy looks like right now, it is on the mend. But it's going to be a very long time, Jimmy, before we see, let alone two-digit growth in our economy. It's going to be a very long time, even before we see a 3% growth in this economy. If, for instance, if I listened to the FED last week when it announced its interest rate decision, it still sees lackluster growth in this economy. And I don't think there's any economist who would disagree that this economy is on demand, but it is still very much lackluster. And there's so much that needs to happen to lift this growth and unlock the growth in this economy.
Mzimasa, given the GDP expectations and that outlook that you've just outlined to say it might be very difficult to hit that 3% target, what do we then expect for the budget speech that is going to be delivered later this month? We know that a lot of it is going to be centered around some of the factors that you mentioned, but we do need to see some way forward that will get us to GDP growth. Are there any surprises we can expect? Are there any good things to look forward to in the speech? Are there any concerns that we might want to hear addressed in the speech?
No, absolutely. One of the good things for taxpayers, we would not expect personal tax increases in this budget. But what you may see is that he, as he did last year, he may not adjust for inflation the tax brackets that he has. That may be negative, but as far as personal income tax, I would not expect any increase in personal tax or any other tax increases. VAT, I would not expect, he would not touch VAT. Company income tax, we would expect it to remain as it is. But as is always the case, where we would expect some form of upward adjustment is on what I call sin taxes, your tobacco, alcohol, sweet beverages. That's where you can expect some upward adjustment in tax. And of course, are we going to hear any meaningful announcement on what people call basic income grant? I don't think we will, but what we may see, and I would not argue with the minister, given the level of poverty in this country, what we may see is an increase in social grants across the board, including what we call the SRB. You know, because remember, it was supposed to end by the 31st of March this year. It may be extended for another year. That would be in the budget. As far as growth is concerned, we would expect, for instance, that I would not expect the minister to extend any bailouts to Transnet nor Eskom. But what we may find is that he may say he has some contingency allowance, you know. But I would not expect any extension to those two particular entities.
Mm.
And he may certainly, because I mean, our municipalities are actually quite another area of concern. We may see some announcement in one way or form as to how to support local municipalities, because that's exactly where service delivery occurs. That's exactly where plants and industries are at. We're supposed to be manufacturing and creating growth. So you may see some form of announcement on support to local municipalities.
Certainly some interesting expectations ahead of the budget speech. Obviously, that speech is still 2 weeks away, and we'll continue to build up towards those expectations. But thank you so much, Mzimasi, for those insights and for sharing your thoughts with us. Mzimasi Mabeqe, who is the head of fixed income at Melville Douglas, a division of the Standard Bank Group. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's about that time on a Wednesday where we have an executive lounge conversation. We welcome an executive into our conversations and hopefully get to know the executives a little bit better beyond just their day-to-day. This week's executive is the CEO of Honor South Africa, part of the Honor Group, Fred Joe, and he joins me to take a look at what it is that he does when he's not running Honor South Africa and what it is he enjoys doing. Good evening, Fred. Thanks so much for taking the time. Interesting business to be a part of, particularly in the tech space, but I suppose for you, it doesn't seem too far-fetched. You've been in the tech space for quite some time.
Yeah. So, hi, Jimmy. This is Fred. Thank you for your introduction. Actually, yes, I have been in the tech industry for the last 14 years after my graduate from 2011. So for the last 14 years, always be in the tech industry. So, and right now, I end up right in Honor South Africa as the CEO.
Fred, what drew you to tech? I mean, coming out of school with all the opportunities that might have been in front of you, what drew you to this tech space? And would you say it's been the right decision considering the last 14 odd years of your career?
So when I do my university studies, actually I study in another degrees, not like the tech. But I have a very high interest in tech when I was in high school and also in university. And I believe that high tech, all this kind of tech or connections actually can build the life totally different for a bunch of people, a huge, massive group of people. And that's my direction when I study in the university in grade two. I made the decisions afterwards. After my graduate, I want to work in the tech industries and try my best. Maybe I can make something different. And that's, have the challenge to the normal life.
Mm. Fred, what do you enjoy most about working at Honor? I mean, you've worked at other companies like Huawei that would potentially be considered competitors in some spaces. What do you enjoy most about what you do now?
So as Honor, everyone knows Honor is a new brand which become independent company 4 years ago. And I believe when I decided to come to Honors, because I think I'm a person who like challenges, and I always need challenges to fulfill my heart. So when I have all these different opportunities, I think there is bigger challenges in with Honor in South Africa, and which can make me feel I'm grow up and have the, let's say, inner peace inside of me. So that's why I end up with take the Honor's job.
Mm. Fred, when you can't find inner peace at work, what do you do outside of work to just calm you down after a stressful day? What do you just go back to and say, I just need to calm down?
Yes, day-to-day life, everyone have a lot of pressures. So from my side, sports, exercise, always calming me down. So I do a lot of hiking on weekend. I do also basketball and tennis. So basically, from weekend side, after work side, this kind of exercise or outdoor activities actually calm me down quite a lot.
Fred, what's your favorite food?
My favorite food, because after I graduated from China, from university, I start in Argentina. So I would say steak is my current best favorite food. Ribeye.
A ribeye steak. That's quite interesting.
Yes.
Fred, you mentioned that you enjoy sports. Is there a favorite sport that you have, a favorite sport you enjoy playing, or even one that you enjoy watching?
I watch quite a lot of basketball matches, and right now for weekend, I always play basketball once a week. So I would say basketball right now is my favorite sport.
Basketball is your favorite sport. That's quite an interesting sport. Not very popular in South Africa as yet. I suppose it will take off at some point. Fred, what do you look forward to most about getting out of the office? Aside from the sports, aside from the good ribeye, when you get the one chance to say, I'm going to do this one thing, what do you look forward to the most?
Out of the daily life and also the exercise, sports, actually, sometimes I will pick a very nice, like, hotels outside of the cities and bring one or two book and just spend like one day there. Just like come down, no interrupt from anyone, and just read the book within one day. And yeah, sometimes maybe once or twice a year, I would do these kind of things. But not day to day, yeah.
Fred, having worked in other countries and now working in South Africa, how are you finding that transition? What are you finding are some of the differences? What do you enjoy most about working in South Africa?
So as Chinese work in South Africa, the different, or let's say the conflict of the, like, the cultures, and that's the first stage, I always found there is a, like, a conflict between different cultures, and then get to understand all the cultures and get used to that culture, actually takes like some long time, but it's a very nice process for me to explore my life and have a different, like, experience for me. So I think that's quite interesting.
Fred, you mentioned you're Chinese. It is the year of the snake, if I'm not mistaken. Happy Chinese New Year. I think that happened recently. Did you do anything to celebrate? Is it difficult to kind of be able to celebrate when you are in South Africa, or is it very easy to be able to still enjoy those holidays?
So, yes, actually, last week, Wednesday, is our Chinese New Year. You know, the first of Spring Festival. We call it the Spring Festival. And I have been, like, taken through a lot of, like, Chinese New Year's overseas. And sometimes we hang out with friends. But last week, or this Chinese New Year, actually makes something different for me. Because at that particular day, we launch Honor X9C and X7C in South Africa. So we have a lunch event with our media partners, with our KOL partners, and also some operator partners at the same time. So basically, I would say we spend this year Chinese New Year together with all the trust and valuable friends together.
Fred, for someone that has never used an Honor product, I for one have never tried the product, what would you say would be the draw card to using an Honor Android device as opposed to other ones? I know my producer has an Honor device, but I have been between Huawei's and Samsung's. I've never actually tried an Honor product. Why would someone kind of make that switch if they were interested in it?
Wow, so Jimmy, that's a pity you never tried an Honor product before. So, yes, no worry.
I'm open to trying it. I'm more than happy to try it. I'm always one that believes that tech should be explored and innovation is always a good thing. So I'm very happy to try an Honor product. But yes, you were saying?
Yes. So from our side, I think the first one I want to, you know, is the reason why the consumers have to try Honor product. The first one I would say is the product qualities. Just like the Honor X9C, it's like the best, we call it unbreakable AI smartphone. So you can see from the words unbreakable, that means the phone is tough and the quality is like out of the roof. So definitely that's the first reason, because of the quality. And the second one is, we believe, like, you see the AI capabilities currently. So with Honor handset, we have four layers AI capabilities and makes the Honor handset can cooperate across different like platform, handset, laptop, tablets, wearables, and audios, all this kind of stuff, and make a very smooth cooperation between.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave the conversation there, Fred. We have gone into news time. We're going to wrap up the conversation on our end. But for right now, it's just gone 7 o'clock. Greg Coast is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, good night.